Greetings and welcome to the latest edition of the Entheogenic Evolution Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Martin, and I'm very happy to have you with me today. Monday, April 8th, it's Eclipse Day for those of you who are in the path of the total solar eclipse that is happening across North America today. I'm very excited for you if you are. I got to see the one in 2017 up here in Oregon, and it was just amazing. It was so cool when the moon passed in front of the sun and everything turned purple and the stars came out and the people went crazy. It was great. Really, really beautiful. So for those of you who are lucky enough to be in the path of the eclipse, I'm sure you're having a very special experience today. And I wish I were with you. I hope to get a chance to see another one again because it's definitely worth it. If you've driven, if you've flown, if you've traveled to see it, I'm sure that you are glad that you did because, man, cosmic events, they don't happen all that often, and they're definitely worthwhile. Anyway, today my guest is Pablo Lopez. He is a psychotherapist working in Spain. And just want to say that English is definitely not his first language, so it's very, very brave and courageous of Pablo to come on the podcast and share his thoughts about 5-MeO-DMT and psychotherapy and human development and sexuality and the way that the ego develops and gets blocked along the way and all of that, doing it all in English. So I just want to commend Pablo for coming on the podcast and sharing his thoughts. It's actually a very long conversation. So just so you know, what I'm doing is I'm presenting about the first two-thirds of the conversation are here on the podcast for you, the regular listener. And the last 45 minutes, for anyone who's curious, I'm going to post that over at my Patreon page for my patron supporters so that they can continue listening to what Pablo has to share. The last 45 minutes, he gets more into his psychotherapeutic model of human development and how the ego develops, and that's just going to be available exclusively for my patrons. So other than that, we still have like an hour and a half of conversation that I'm sharing here on the podcast today, which I'm sure that you will find fascinating. So looking forward to getting to that. But first, a couple announcements. I do want to thank Brooke, who's made a donation via PayPal, as she does every month in support of the Entheogenic Evolution Podcast. Thank you so much, Brooke. You're like one of my longest supporters of this podcast. You've been doing this small monthly contribution. You've been doing it for years, and you're so awesome. So I get to say your name every month. And for you listeners, if you want to support this podcast, I invite you to stop by my personal webpage, martinball.net. Use the PayPal link at the top right of the page, or come on over to Patreon, where there's everywhere from $1 a month and multiple different levels all the way up to $100 a month. You get increasing access, bonus, and gifts all along the way. There's no obligation. You can come and go as you like. You can change your support level, whatever is comfortable for you. And for those of you who are my patrons, thank you so much. That I really appreciate that monthly support that I get over there at Patreon. As you know, I am an independent author, musician, publisher, a podcaster, all this stuff that I do, and it's all done very independently. So people who support me at Patreon really make a difference for me every month. So thank you so much. Also, we have a little special bonus in the podcast today. Someone who has corresponded with me over the years now is musician Corin Smith. Most recently, Corin reached out and asked if I would design an album cover for his new album, which is entitled Divine Will. And he had some ideas for that, and he said, hey, let's see what you can come up with. So we did a little back and forth, and I designed the album cover for him, and his album has just been released. And it's out there now. It's on Spotify and all the streaming services and everywhere you get digital music. And what Corin wanted to do was share one of the tracks here on the podcast. So after the interview with Pablo, we have the song Love is the Law by Corin Smith. And just to, you know, briefly describe Corin, he's kind of a electronic musician who also is just one of these phenomenal lead guitarists who can just wail away on the guitar, and he does just very powerful instrumental music, and that's the track that we're going to be listening to is Love is the Law. It's got a cool electronic beat and vibes, and then the guitar kicks in, and so if you like power guitar and power solos, Corin is the guy for you. Yeah. And I'm going to put the link to Corin's album Divine Will on Spotify in the notes to the podcast here. So if you want to read through the description of this week's podcast episode and link over to Spotify to check out Corin's new album, go for it. Also, a reminder, we are now done with sharing the audiobook of Facilitating 5-MeO-DMT here on the podcast. If you've missed any of it, you can go grab the whole thing over at Audible, Amazon, or the Apple Bookstore. And what I'm going to start doing now between interviews, so every other week, we're going to have chapters from the Solandarian game. And also, as I publish that on Facebook, I'm going to be uploading some of the images that I've created for the AI Imagined Art Illustrated version of the novel that I released at the very beginning of this year on January 1st. And I'm inviting people to get a copy of the AI imagined illustrated version of the Solandarian game, and you can read along and look at the pictures as we have chapters from the audiobook of the novel here on the podcast. I think it will be fun. If you would like a free PDF copy of the first 5 chapters, shoot me an email at martinwball@gmail.com. And I'll provide you with a link to where you can download that. Otherwise, you can get the ebook at Kindle, you can get it at the Apple Bookstore, or you can get it at my shop at my Patreon page, patreon.com/martinwball. And you go to shop, and then there is the PDFs of many of my books available there, including the Solandarian game, and you can download that with the full color artwork. There's over 600 AI-generated images to go along with the story. So that's going to be starting next week here on the podcast. Since I already released chapters 1 and 2 at the beginning of the year when I released the new illustrated version of the book, we're going to start with chapters 3 and 4. Okay, so if you want to catch up, go back, scroll down through the old episodes of the podcast, go to January 1st, 2024, and there's the first 2 chapters of the book, and we're going to continue with that next week, and that will be over the next however many months it takes to get through the book in between interviews. All right, well, I've been rambling on long enough. Let's go ahead and get into this lengthy conversation with Pablo Lopez from Spain, talking about all things related to 5-MeO, symmetry, the development of the ego, human sexuality, the processing of blocks, how we get stuck, how we get unstuck, all that good stuff. Hope you enjoy. And we'll be back next week with more from the Solandarian game. All right. Well, today I'm welcoming on to the Entheogenic Evolution podcast, Pablo Lopez. And Pablo is a clinical psychologist and psychotherapist who lives in Spain. And we've had a little bit of a email exchange over the years. Pablo has been someone that's been interested in my own work with 5-MeO-DMT, and he's actually been applying some of the principles that I've outlined there in that work in his psychotherapy work. And so just from these email exchanges that we've had, that I thought that Pablo might be someone interesting to have here on the podcast and share about himself and his own experience and where he sees the applicability of these ideas of working with entheogens, but in the psychotherapist model that he also works within, which does not use entheogens or psychedelics. So thought it'd be an interesting crossover interview. So Pablo, welcome to the show.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I'm a little tired today, but that's pretty normal for me because I do have this chronic sleep disorder. So I have a lot of days that are tired, and today is one of them.
Yes, the chronic disorder. Yes, I know. I read about your writings. I've read, and I know. Well, I hope you will improve now.
Yeah, I hope so too. I'm on year 5 now of this, so I don't know how much more improvement I'll get, but you know, I do what I can to make it through. But we don't need to talk about that. We're here to talk about you.
So
Pablo, it's nice to have you here, and let's just go ahead and start with an introduction. Go ahead and introduce yourself and your interest in this area. And I know that English is not your language. If there's ever a point where you want me to suggest a word for you, I'll do my best to
yes.
do that. But please go ahead and introduce yourself for the audience.
Well, myself, well, from what point of view, professional, personal, there are many points of view in a person.
Oh, that's very true. Well, how about let's start with the personal and then we can get to professional.
Well, the personal, well, I'm a curious person. I have a family with three sons. One is 25, the other is 22. And just today has gone to Cracovia in Polonia for his scholarship there. And the third is 18 years old. I'm 56. I work as psychotherapist from 1994, many years now. But it doesn't seem to me so much, really. And, well, I'm here because, obviously, I'm interested in the origins, in psychedelics. I studied psychology in its moment, but it was a really, I've analyzed how I did, and it's curious because my sister was studying for teacher, and then there was a book whose name was Summer Hill, that it was about an experimental school in England, and I loved it. It was very interesting for me. Because it was a very free school, and my father was a military man, that was more strict, no? And then reading that book, where the children grew free, he mentioned to Wilhelm Reich, and then I looked for him. I read some books, and I found a great interest. And then this is how I began to, I decided to study psychology. And after I saw in the period of learning, I saw that I had to solve some problems also, no? And not enormous problems, because sometimes I see not only my work, if not in general, in the psychedelic world, if we can say it like this, I see that people comes with heavy problems, hard problems. And in this sense, I feel lucky because mine were not so hard. I am more normal in the society we live, no? After having studied in the university, I entered in the Spanish school of Reichian therapy. And I was 4 years of individual therapy with a time with a masculine therapist, a time with a feminine therapist, and overlapped with 2 years of group therapy, but it was not therapy, if not body psychotherapy. That this is the reason by which I think that it has much to say, this model of psychotherapy with other models, so obviously, but is not very well known. I suppose that this, because it's complex to learn, but is very, I think that has much to say on the integration process after psychedelic or in psychedelic world. And it's a thing that I think. And
what was the name of the what was the name of the form of therapy that you're mentioning?
Yes, the name is. Character analytic vegeto therapy. The vegeto is referred to the autonomous nervous system, that is the same vegetative nervous system, is synonymous. And and it works on with the body. In fact, in my work, when I work in deep therapy, because it's breath therapy, focal focus therapy, and deep psychotherapy, the two types. And in the deep one, you talk very little, some word, but not too much. It's overall through the body that we access to the emotions, to the block.
Yeah.
The blocks that the person brings. And in this path, I found through one of my therapists, a woman, Peyote. The first time I intake some psychedelic, and I remember my first time was really interesting. How to say it? I finished naked in the outdoors, completely naked, thinking, well, if I remain or I stay like this, not naked, if not in the process I was, I will have a problem. I thought, I saw me as a crazy in some train station with his radio out of the world. I felt like this at that moment. But at the same time, I was conscious of this. It's as if I was two persons, the one who took conscious of that and the one who was in that. And I had a lot of energy. I, with my feet on the floor, and well, many things happened. It would be very long, but it was rich for me. It was very rich for me. And after, there were maybe 15, 20 more peyote shots in several years. And after 4 or 5 shots of ayahuasca, and then overlapped with this, I began to repeat the body therapy that I had done in that one that has a methodology, but in autotherapy mode, in the sense that I use the tools, but previously I took a high dose of coffee, Italian coffee, 3 cups of Italian coffee, and after began to hyperventilate. And that took me much further in the depth of the work I do with these tools. In fact, I didn't know then the perinatal matrix of Stanislav Grof. I didn't know them. And but with the time, I understood that I had entered in that. It was really strong, this mixture of, well, this cocktail I did was interesting. After I stopped, I had my children. I needed to live only of my clinic, because then I was combining with other works, selling things on other works, because if not, I had not enough incomes. And finally, I got to live only of my clinic. And with the years, I missed the psychedelics, the entheogens. And in 2018 was my first contact with Buffo Alvarius, with what you call full release dose.
Can I just stop you there for one moment so I can give a little recap? Okay, so just to recap what you've shared so far, that you ended up pursuing an education in psychotherapy. And within that, if I get this right, it's the psychoanalytic vegetal therapy. So it's a form of psychoanalysis, but it sounds like it's very much focused.
No, psychoanalytic. It's a character analytic vegetal therapy, character analytic, because it analyzes character that would be the equivalent to ego, and a vegetal therapy because the body aspect of it, no?
Okay, so it's very much focused on processing in the body, and as you say, removing blocks, encountering emotions.
Yes.
And so it's totally. It's very different than, say, talk therapy or...
Yes.
Yeah, so really focusing on the body. And then around the same time, you got introduced to peyote and had some experiences with peyote, then went on to ayahuasca, and then it sounds like some espresso, some strong Italian coffee. And so you were interested in exploring these modalities, of how to access different embodied states and get into emotions and processing through the body. And you saw those parallels between this vegetal approach and the work with psychedelics, correct?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yes.
And then as you opened your clinic and became a professional practitioner, you had to set the psychedelic work aside, had a family. But now, to bring us more up to date, you mentioned in 2018, now was your first experience of Bufo. So I hope I recapped that well. And
yes.
Yeah. So what brought you into Bufo? How did you hear about it? What were you interested in?
I have interest in returning to ayahuasca or peyote, but peyote is difficult because it's scarce, but ayahuasca was a possibility. But in the page I found here in Valencia, where I live in Spain, in the page I found the group, they did ceremonies of this kind. They mentioned the Bufo. And then what I read about it there, it gave me the impression that was something similar to what I knew, but in a shorter time. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, well, perfect, because then I have not to spend the night there.
Yeah.
But it was very ignorant, very bravery, maybe. on my point, no? And then I arrived there, I arrived there, and all that you say in your books that mustn't be was there. Not all, but almost all. Because it's not that they had a bad intention or nothing like this, no. I can say this, but I think that well, as all the pioneering things, no? The new things pioneer.
Pioneering.
The pioneering is normal that these things happen. I understand, no? But I paid it. And I arrived, the process was like this. I arrived with my bike, not knowing anyone. And I talked with the facilitator maybe not more than 10 minutes and informal chat, not, well, what do you want, why you come, and all these things. And immediately I passed to in the garden and he put me the pipe and wow, it was really strong. But with the time I think, well, it was strange because it was what is supposed to be a full release dose. And for me was not an ego dissolution, if not a very emotional experience. In that time, I took conscious that I worked too much. I worked too much and I was very tired and I didn't know I was so tired. And some of the suffering of my patients was inside of me, and I needed And I remember I cried a lot. It was, in this sense, was very psychological. Was not nor mystical nor God nor all these things. Absolutely not. And then 1 month later, I had the second. And in this verse, I thought, well, it's extraordinary, this substance, because I felt so powerful. It went so deep in me that I saw that it was really good. And then I went to the second 1 month later, but in the second I was a little afraid.
Yeah.
Because I knew what was that. I knew I had a vague idea, but I saw that it was strong, a strong medicine, much more than what I had knew before. No? And in this second, I felt I saw the facilitator and I didn't like him. I was not trustful in him. And moreover, can you imagine? He was with dark glasses. I couldn't see his eyes.
Really? Sunglasses?
Yes, sunglasses. Yeah. And for me, are very important, the eyes, because it's contact, no? And he was with sunglasses. And in the last moment, he introduced a bit more of substance, and I felt uncomfortable because it really was ridiculous. But at that moment, I didn't know. And it alarmed me a little. I didn't show my alarm, but I entered in the process alarmed. I was not quiet. And then was, I don't remember what was, because it was either now, which to both, or a blackout or whiteout. I think that was a blackout. Because after I didn't, I remember when I returned, I remember twice moments in the process, but overall, when I came back, when I was again in my ego again, I was in that garden, and probably I had an ego dissolution, but I don't remember, because I was in the garden, and I was there, and I didn't know where I was, how is that I had arrived there, who I was, and I needed several, maybe 30 seconds, 1 minute, to
reassemble.
My ego. I needed at least 1 minute because I was there, and I had no language in my mind. It was strange, and it's as if all my memories of anything, including being a human being, were erased. Is it?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Well, and after that, I returned to apparent normality, but that night was terrible because the facilitator didn't tell me about the reactivations, or told me very slightly, and that in the morning the inhalation of Bufo, and that night I had to drive 10 hours for our holidays in Portugal, in the Algarve, was. And I asked him in the intake, do you think I would be able of driving this night? And he told, yes, no problem. And I can take coffee. Can I take coffee? Yes, it's no problem, because I was thinking, well, if I'm going to drive at night, I take coffee, no? Well, and then we went out at maybe at 10 at night. And in a certain moment, we stopped. I took a coffee. Wow. You know that 5-MeO-DMT multiplies the effects of other substances. If you take and pronounce it well. This is what happened exactly with coffee to me, because I've never had tachycardia nor nothing like this with coffee, and the combination of both put on or switch on a process of, I was driving, and in a moment I felt what is a reactivation while I was driving. And with my wife at my side, my sons in the back, and I didn't say nothing. I tried to control that, to relax, to tap. Oof, it was an awful night. Finally, I told my wife, I told her, I need to stop. I need to stop because we stopped. But really, what I couldn't do what I need to do. And I knew, I didn't know then that what was necessary was to free all what was there. But at the same time, how my wife that didn't know what was that, and my sons that were my children that were smaller than now, in the middle of a gas station, crazy. It was not possible. And then in Portugal, every night I had a reactivation, and every night I tried to stop it. It was difficult for me. And after, I had 4-5 months, I don't remember exactly, having problems of being with my emotional system absolutely blocked. In the sense that I couldn't, my emotional sensors were switched off. No? My wife told me, your look, your eyes, you seem an alien, no? In the way I was. Fortunately, I could work, I could do my normal life, I could, but who knew me noticed that I was not okay, no?
Yeah.
And I stop. If you want, feel free to cut me and to ask me, feel free to do it.
No problem. Okay. Yeah, at this point, I would just like to give a little bit of a recap of what you shared, because I think this is all very interesting. So you had your first experience with Bufo in 2018, and it sounds like you weren't really given a lot of information about it. You said you basically arrived, and then they sat you down on the garden, and here comes the pipe, and you had your experience, and obviously, this contrasts very strongly with the second one, but in this first one, it was much more personal in the sense that you were experiencing yourself, your relationship to your work, your relationship to your clients, and it sounds like you were experiencing that you were a bit of a workaholic, that you were always working, always busy, and really tired, and it was running you down. And this is one of the ways that Bufo can work, or 5-MeO can work, where I say that sometimes first what it needs to do is find the places where you're most hung up in your ego and address those first before you can move into a non-dual experience. And so that's what you got with that first one. So it was very, very powerful, very fast, and very personal. And it had that sense of content to it and being able to identify, oh, this is me working too much. This is me taking on the problems of my clients. This is me not caring for myself enough and getting enough rest and taking care of myself.
Exactly.
Yes. So then you come for your second time. And from the very beginning, it sounds like you weren't quite comfortable. You mentioned that the facilitator was wearing sunglasses, so you couldn't see him. You couldn't make contact, which of course is something that's very, very important, that you're putting yourself essentially in somebody else's hands for this really powerful experience. And I think most people want to feel that they can make contact and trust their facilitator, but you know, wearing dark sunglasses, that's just a barrier. And then from what you describe, yes, that was definitely a full release dose, and you went into a blackout. And this also is very common in early experiences with Bufo or 5-MeO-DMT where the ego goes away and then there's just a blank time period where you don't know what happened. And you were able to go into this state because you had already addressed that personal stuff the month before. So now you were primed to be able to go into a full release dose. And then I really like your description because when the ego does come back, for some people, it all comes back at once where they're, I don't know what's happening. And all of a sudden there's the ego and they're immediately fully back in the ego. But what you're describing is more of this layered approach where first you become aware of, I don't know who I am and I don't know where I am. I don't know what's happening, but that's the first glimmers of that individuated awareness. And then you said it took at least a minute. And that's actually pretty fast where then you're starting to remember.
Well, I say a minute, but really I don't know because I had no notion of time.
Right. Right. So as the ego is reassembling, and I like this description here because you said that you didn't know where you were or how you had gotten there. And you had no memories. You didn't know yourself. And this is where we get this example of how when the ego reforms, it's not just reforming you, your sense of yourself, but it's also reassembling the world outside you at the same time. So that as you remember, oh, I'm Pablo, and I'm in a garden. Okay, so these things, they come together, because I always like to point out that the ego is not just about the self. It's about the self and everything that is thought of as not the self.
Yes.
And that it has, so it has to create the context of, I am in this place doing this thing, and that's what's happening. And that's how the ego reconstitutes. And from your description then of, unfortunately, you were given the advice that, you'll be able to drive. And this is, it's a tricky bit of advice because a lot of people, they can. You can get in your car, you can drive, you can go do your thing. But other people won't. Yeah, not necessarily at night is not necessarily a good idea. But then other people, they're going to need more time. And that you weren't really informed about reactivations and then even going and drinking coffee, because this is something that we get after a Bufo or a 5-MeO experience, where any alteration in your energy, whatever it may be, whether it's coffee or it's meditating or making love or dancing, anything can then trigger that sense of, oh, now all of this is happening again, right? So it doesn't need to be a psychedelic. And it could just be anything that creates that shift. And so from what you describe, you kind of fit into the category of someone that I would say left his session incomplete, that after that second experience with Bufo, you probably could have benefited from continuing to work a bit more, because then all this energy was up for you and then it's starting to crash into your driving. It's disrupting your sleep. And it sounds like you were fighting with it because you weren't really informed about how to work with it or how to manage it. And so you fought with it and that ended up closing off your connection to your own emotional expression.
Yes, I've understood this later, no? But then was like this. And in fact, the facilitator proposed me to do, when I explained, because I called her after the days after, and I explained my situation that I was every night with almost panic attacks.
Yeah.
And then he told me that it would be convenient to do another one. But at that moment, was not so clear that in literature or in what you could read, the scars that you could read, was not so clear and it was contradictory. And then as I didn't trust in him, I thought, well, if it is worse, and then I didn't do. And what happened was that every night at 3 o'clock, more or less half past three, I woke up because not because I wanted, if not because I was awoken, and then there was a moment that, as it was every night, I decided to give a try to do something, and then I took my bike, I went to my office, and I tried to express to all what I felt, all the energy I shout, I moved, and all this. But overall, for me, was very useful, a technique that maybe you know. For me, was a before and an after reading you your book of the, I never remember, the 5 million, the what?
The Entheogenic Liberation, the blue book?
Yes, this one. For me, yes, yeah. Exactly. It was very, very, I have the electronic and paper. It was very, very chill for me, very, I recognized myself. I saw, wow, it has been my ego. I understood everything that I read. And it, I thought, well, now I know where I am, because I was a little worried. And then there was a technique that I knew that is used for traumatic situations. And then I applied here. And then at that moment, after what I experienced there with that, for me was, it was TRE, do you know?
Say it again.
TRE, trauma release exercise.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've heard that phrase. Yeah.
Yes, if you want, I can send you some link to this. Well, and I began very strong, but at the same time, I felt, well, now I'm sure that I will go out of this. And in the very moment, I felt that was discharging all that thing that was inside me, no? But the second one taught me that the first one taught me that was very good. The second one taught me that you must be careful.
Yes. No?
That. And then after a time of a stop, no, I bought 5-MeO-DMT, a certain quantity of synthetic.
Okay, hold on. I'm going to pause you there because I want to do another quick recap, because there's a couple points that I really want to emphasize here. That part of what you described is also something that's very common for people, where you said after that second experience, especially you're in the car, you're with your wife, you're with your kids, that you didn't feel that you could express everything that you were going through. And so you were having to hold back on all of that, because of course they didn't understand, you didn't want them to worry, and this
exactly overall the second, I didn't want them to worry, because I knew that if I let it was going to be very, very, very strong. Yeah. And you imagine in a gas station, in the you can, it's not, because probably an ambulance would have, someone would have called an ambulance, and the problem would have been bigger for me.
Right. So this is also very common for people as they're encountering these post-session energies and experiences that are, it's disturbing, it's very hard to go through, and often people clamp down at that point because they think, yeah, I'm going to end up in a mental hospital. They're going to come call the ambulance. They're going to take me away. My family doesn't understand. And so this is also a common theme for a lot of people, that they're encountering all this afterwards, but they don't feel that they can really express what they're going through, and they can't let themselves really go through it because they're trying to keep their shit together so that they don't worry anybody else in their life. And this is where it's very good that you finally did get on that bike in the middle of the night and go to your office and then do this trauma release exercise, because that's what needed to happen all along, right? And the more you were fighting against it, that was actually increasing the trauma, right? Because there's that constant anxiety of when is it going to come? When is it going to disturb me? When is it going to worry my family? And this is where, again, not everyone, but it's very common that after a BUFO experience, you do need time to be able to have these energetic embodiment sessions where you go through those emotions, you go through those experiences where you feel like you're losing your mind and you don't have any control over yourself and that all of this stuff is coming out and your body is moving and you're making sounds, but it's a part of the process. And this is something that I think it's very important for also people who facilitate. They need to know this so that they can inform their clients. You may need to do this.
The clients and the family, because it's very easy to say, no, you, let go. Yes, but you are at home. You are in your bed.
Right.
Your wife, your sons, your children are there. You have neighbors. And it's not so easy because you are not in a protected space, no? You need a space where you feel safe, no? And you don't feel safe because no one surrounding you knows or is familiar with what is going to be. And then they would be, I think that they would, it would be scary for them. Yeah. At least in my case, because I'm expressive. And I have, naturally, I have a lot of energy, and then imagine more, no?
And that's one of the reasons why I often recommend, like, just like yourself, then you got a hold of my book, Entheogenic Liberation. You're able to read it and recognize, okay, this is my experience. This is what I'm going through. And that's often why I recommend that somebody, like in your own case, I would say, okay, so then also give the book to your wife, give the book to your kids, let them read it so that then they know, okay, this is what dad is going through, and they can have an understanding of it.
I did, but by the reason, you must translate it to Spanish because my wife doesn't know Spanish. Doesn't know English. Well, it would be very well accepted in Spanish language, I tell you. While thinking, do you want to say something?
Then getting that opportunity, and I think this is also important for a lot of people that, you know, you felt very alone and very on your own, right? That your facilitators themselves, I mean, they did have good advice that, well, maybe come back and do it again, that can seem counterintuitive, but often that is good advice because, well, this is all still going on for you. So why not go all the way in? But it can be very scary to take that step. But at the very least, then getting to read Entheogenic Liberation allowed you to put it into a context to understand that there wasn't anything abnormal happening with you.
It's very important.
Yeah. And that sense of relief of just knowing, okay, I can work with this, and giving yourself that opportunities. And this is where I like to say that being educated around it is what empowers us to be able to really work with these after effects that we're getting. And it's such a fundamental part. And it's probably, I mean, you didn't describe anything from your peyote or your ayahuasca experiences where you're having to process these energies afterwards, that, you know, it's very different when we're working with these other psychedelics because we leave the session and then we go home and, you know, we might have new thoughts, we might be inspired, but it's not working on us the same way that 5-MeO does. And that's why it requires a special set of knowledge to really know how to work with it.
Yes, totally agree. And then I bought 5-MeO-DMT, but I was so afraid that, two things happened. That after reading your book, I took notice that I didn't know anyone who could be a good facilitator for me. And then I thought, well, I must do it alone. But alone with not a full release dose is clear. Yeah. And then I began with low doses of maybe 1 milligram or something like this. But I was so afraid. It was, my mind told me that it was very good, but at the same time, my body had the memory of what has been, right. had been. And then I began with a very teeny quantity, but it was strong for me. It was really strong for me, yeah. that teeny quantity. And at the beginning, I did one hit, but after rereading your book, I thought, well, if I do 3 or 4 hits, if I follow this process, but with small quantities. And I instilled in my mind the idea of what happens is if instead of going directly in full release dose, following the way you do, one begins with a gradual process, step by step. And I will explain what I've observed. No? Mm-hmm. Well, and then I began like this, and I did 3-4 hits, depending. The fact is that when you finish, you feel grounded, quiet, and overall with a smile in my mouth or sometimes with a laugh, saying, well, why am I so afraid? It's so simple, everything. And I want to tell you something that I have found common in peyote, ayahuasca, psilocybin, San Pedro, another one, I don't know now. Well, that all of them, in some moment, the conclusion, the final conclusion that after I've forgotten, but the final conclusion was, it's so simple, you must be only in life present, no more.
Right.
It's simplicity. But with all of them, the conclusion, if in some moment I've arrived to this conclusion, to say, well, why so much questioning? It's living life in present, now here, now I'm there. Very, very, a lot of simplicity. And after I forgot.
Yeah, I want to repeat that because I think that is just so golden. And I think it's actually really hard for the human ego to accept that you kind of arrive at that conclusion that it's simple. All I need to do is be present in the moment, present in myself, present in my life, and be myself, and that's really all that there is. And then eventually the ego comes back and says, oh, but no, actually, I've got to evolve through all these different layers, and I've got to figure out all these puzzles, and I've got to make it more complicated.
Yes, not this question of layers, if not, I think that thought is a tool that has appeared in evolution for us, and that still we are not... we've not learned to use it. Mm. Really, in fact, in life, thought the majority of time is not needed. We need it only in certain moments for solving some question, for essaying a problem, a solution to a problem, for organizing something. But in the daily life, when you walk in the street, when you are eating, when you are talking, really, you don't need, thought is not so necessary. It's I think that is so recent in evolution that still we don't know how, what to do with it. No? We are a little lost in it. I think so. And I think that, well, a question using, well, with well, what I learned with you was I gave a try. I gave a try. I like this expression. I gave a try to Symmetry.
Mm-hmm. Symmetry.
And then, how is it pronounced?
Symmetry.
Symmetry. Yes. To symmetry. And then I did a test that was very simple with a low quantity. Then when I began to do the test, I was in 2 milligrams or 2.5 milligrams each hit. And I did 3-4 hits depending. And I will explain some detail on this. And then I was in symmetric position or posture. And simply when, although 2.5 milligrams is a low quantity, but also you have a peak, and after you go down. And when you are going down, that is still you feel your electricity, your body with all this intense charge. I did on purpose. I crossed my arms on my chest, my limbs, and I stopped some seconds, and it was awful. And after I opened again, and whoa, again it was good. I crossed again, but it was immediate. Yeah. It was not after several seconds, immediate. And I opened, and it was if I put a lock in the middle of the current of a river, and mm-hmm. I cut the current. The waters are turbulent. So it is exactly the same. And I tested it also crossing my legs and returning to symmetry and moving my head to one side, to the other. And, well, and then I thought, well, Martin is right. From that moment, I began to do always like this. And after I suggested it to a friend of mine, first one friend, after two more, with my wife who had the curiosity of testing 5-MeO-DMT in low dose, mm-hmm. as I did, she tested it and could see that it was exactly like this. And all of them, they saw really was like this. And there are two things that I want to comment with you.
Yeah.
First, that now, till April, May, June, till June of 2023, from 2020, I've done 90 sessions like this. And now I was in 5-6, because you know it's not so accurate the measure, 5-6 milligrams of 5-MeO-DMT each hit, no? And in seeing what happens in each session, really I see each session, what is moved, what is processed, and after, between sessions, what happens in my week. In the nights, at 3 o'clock, at 4 o'clock, that my wife is accustomed now, and she accepts, she's not worried. If I begin to cry, or think like this. I remember once, I was looking at her, straining her eyes, and I couldn't distinguish her from me. It was strange.
Right.
It was strange, but it was not in the day of the session, if not, it was at night. Well, I can't understand how. Well, it takes a lot of work, the integration, and I do with small quantities. How is it possible that people make several sessions and there's not enough time to integrate all what is moved? Then I can't understand how I think that by the reason that the people fly to other worlds, mysticism, is a way of flying away of, I mean, fly as fight or flight. I mean this. It's a way of flying of what they must confront, because it takes work, and each session, and I'm talking about 90, not 9, 90. And I know that when I retake, because I had a bike accident and I stopped, when I retake, I know that it will be like this. And this is one question. And the other is that that they observe this. When I began with 1.5 milligram and 3-4 hits, it took me to feeling for the next hit more or less 20 minutes. 15, 20 minutes, something like this, no? But after several sessions, this time was shortened to 5 minutes.
Right.
And for me, was a signal to increase to the next level. And then, for example, when I passed from 4 milligrams to 5, 6, it's always something like this, no? Not exactly. For example, when I was in 4 or 3.5 milligrams, at the beginning, it took me 20 minutes, 25 to process emotionally and to feel energetically, because I don't dare what you say, that immediately, when you return, immediately. No, alone, no.
Yeah.
Alone. I don't dare to steal. And then I waited till it was down, till I felt, I cannot say with which reference, my sensation, no? And then and I observed that with 4 milligrams, it's the same, no? At the beginning, 20 minutes, 25, each hit, then it took me, imagine, 3-4 hits, no? And then the time, step by step, in each session, every 15 days, more or less, every 2 weeks, 3 weeks, more or less, is shortened till it's 5 minutes or including less. And I go, when this has happened, well, not only this, if not that you feel that although you've done 4 hits, for example, you feel that you've not finished, that you need another one to finish. Then the combination of this reduced time, and the need of another hit that was more than was the normal, the 3 or 4 normal, is the signal that I take for next step, more quantity. And what is curious is that the process, the curve,
mm-hmm.
curve,
yeah,
the curve of the session happens with 1 milligram, with 2, with 3, with 4, always happens in the sense that if you do the necessary hits, 3, 4 is what I find, as you explained. Always I finished grounded, peaceful, happy, chill. I don't know if it's
sure.
the word. Sereno, quiet.
Yeah. Serene.
And with my face and my eyes relaxed, clean, in contact with life, all this, no, is what I feel. And it's curious because with low doses happens the same. It happens like this. And And I wanted to say something. Yes. Yes. Another thing I have found is that with all the peyote, ayahuasca, with all of them, that at the end of in the third part of the experience, in the more or less in the third, if you divide the total experience in three or four parts, in the final, no?
Right.
Remains in me an electrical sensation in all my body that is uniform in all my body, and that with the time I discover that when I feel this, it's not a good idea remaining quiet. I believe that it's better letting movement, the movements you want, letting movements, because it's too much charge, and it's pleasurable, pleasant, mm-hmm. but too much is has something is brilliant. And then if you remain, you can be, but I think that is better movement. I don't know if you feel like this or not, I don't know, but this is what I feel.
Yeah, well, let me come back to that, and I just want to recap what you've shared again here. So after getting some pure 5-MeO on your own, you started working with very low doses, and usually those really low doses, they tend to be more effective for people who have already had a large dose. So you fit into that category because your body already knows this can go really big. And it sounds like you worked with it very systematically and really with a lot of self-observation. So you're looking at, when do I feel ready for the next hit? And that time window would collapse. So that kind of fits in alignment with what I say, that when we're working with this, we're going through an energetic recalibration period, and that there's an attunement that's happening. So at first, 1 milligram is really strong, and it takes you 20 minutes to feel ready for the next one. And then that it's getting shorter and shorter, and then you're feeling like, okay, I'm ready to move up a notch now. So you've done the recalibration that you can do at 1 milligram, and then you add another milligram, and then add another milligram as you go. And that, of course, with 5-MeO, every milligram makes a difference because it's so potent.
Yes.
It's so powerful.
Yes, I know.
Yeah. And it also sounds like during this time period that your wife was understanding what you were doing, so you didn't feel those same internal inhibitions or limits to, oh, I can't cry in the middle of the night, right?
That yes, and there is a thing I want to explain, because I think it's important, about what happens with your partner or your couple, your the wife in this case, mm-hmm. or your family. And I think that a gradual process, as I'm doing, leads to your surroundings to gradually, not consciously, making change, adapting entering in the same, I don't know if the same, but also with the energy. Do you understand?
Yes.
Because if it's too much, in one session or in 6 months, there is not enough time for your surroundings to adapt to you, and you are in another point. But if the energetic system in you goes changing step by step, then your surroundings, if at least they are very conflicted, is not my case, they have time to unconsciously, I suppose, adapting, and you have time also to not taking decisions under the pressure or the right. of right. the the effects of the substance, because our mind, our ego is tremendously tricky, and tricky is correct?
Yeah, yes.
Is tremendously tricky, and it gets, it tries always taking you to the same place, but as a fox, very
yeah, sneaky.
It's very like you know, in the country, one, I was sleeping one night in the country alone, and a fox appeared, and it was very tricky to, because she or he, I don't know what was, wanted my food and came in the night by one side after from the other side. And each time I threw her some stone, but appeared in another place. And, well, the echo is like this.
Yeah, I think that that's a great analogy. So this idea of kind of this slow, measured progress that you were applying for yourself, and really being very aware of all those different aspects of the process, and looking to reach that sense of completion with each session that you had, where you feel like, okay, I'm grounded, I'm relaxed, I'm not leaving this with any tensions, that allows the ego to be more relaxed. And then as these changes are happening gradually, there's more time for everybody, and yourself included, to adjust, versus, as you said, with that second experience you had, that you came back and your wife said, well, you look like an alien, that I can't see you behind your eyes, that you're like an alien, that the changes can be so abrupt. And that also the way that you were working with this through these 90 different sessions was not that escape that you mentioned, where sometimes we do get that with 5-MeO and other psychedelics, where everyone is like, I just need to go to my next session. I need to do it again because I want to get out. I want to get away. I want to, you know, lift myself out of all my problems, versus your process that you're describing is more of this, what I sometimes I call an inversion, where it's like, no, I'm trying to be here more, and I'm using this to be here, to ground into this energetic reality, and that you're taking care of your energy all the way through. And just to this last point that you mentioned of when you're feeling a lot of electricity in the body, that yes, I do think it's good to move. And kind of my format for that would be, okay, so at this point, when you're on the back end of your psychedelic experience, but you're still feeling a lot of energy in your body, what I would like to do is I would start by moving symmetrically with it.
Yes.
And then I would want to get up and then maybe dance around. Like, definitely would change the music at that point, put on some dance music, move around, work with that energy, express it. And then to finish, I would come back and move in symmetry a little bit more and wait till that sensation felt like it grounded out. But it's kind of like, it's like you're feeling, it's almost like an energy of an anticipation of, I'm really excited about something, so I've got to act on it. And so that is a good time to act on it and let it flow and see where the flow takes you, that it becomes this exploration of how does this energy want to express? How does it want to embody and move out? Mm-hmm. And that, you know, this is another place where I do say that if we're looking at some somatic practices with psychedelics and embodied practices with psychedelics, this is very different than, say, going to a therapist's office where you want to lie down under a blanket, put an eye shade on, and lie there for the next 5 hours. That there's lots of space to root and to move and to express, and that's what actually allows us more deeply to get into our energy and get into our emotions. And I also love the fact that you did this experiment with putting your body into symmetry, crossing your limbs, seeing how that felt, going back into symmetry, that I think this point is so basic that there's still a lot of resistance to it, that people tend to think
I invite all the audience, is a question, is empiric, it's not a question of a theoretical, it's really empiric. You must do, all who is hearing this podcast must do so simple experiment. It's not it's not complicated. You don't need a huge quantity. You need only 2 milligrams of 5-MeO-DMT, and it's very simple.
Yeah, you can cross your limbs, you can bundle yourself up and see how that feels, and then try opening up and being in symmetry, yes, and then see how that feels. And that's the point that I've tried to make with this, that it's testable, it's empirical, you can observe it in others, you can ask other people to try it. And like yourself, everyone who has contacted me about this topic and says, well, I tried it, and wow, it really made a difference. And so that's where I just like to urge people, well, try it. You know, I'm not asking you to believe anything. Just try it. Try working with symmetry, then try crossing your limbs, or try being asymmetrical and see how that feels. And then notice, when do you feel most open? When do you feel most present with yourself? And when do you feel most grounded? And then I think the differences become clear if you're really paying attention.
And another thing that I find very important also, not to go to the worlds of la la la, is being focused in your organic, energetic, somatic, interoceptive, all the with is well. In one hit, first you let go, no? But after, when you return after the peak, is when the ego tries to recuperate its the control and all this, no? And a way of not entering in this game is maintaining your attention focused in the organic sensations with no meaning, with no psychic activity, not detaining, only feeling, not thinking. And it requires discipline. It's not spontaneous, at least in my case. For me, it requires some discipline. And I've observed that after doing it many times in so strong situations, after in my life, it's much easier to maintain my attention in present.
Yeah,
because
it requires retraining ourselves, because as soon as the ego thinks it has something to do, then it wants to think about it. It wants to make plans. It's, you know, people go into their heads, right? They as kind of like you were mentioning before, that we tend to overthink, that we use thinking totally too much when we don't actually need it. And this is where the advice is, just pay attention to what you feel. That don't go into thoughts. Pay attention to what you feel. And this is where, again, we want to focus on the body. We want to focus on the sensations that are happening there. Noticing, oh, well, am I getting tense? Am I relaxed? Am I noticing what I'm feeling? Or am I disconnected? Am I just in my thoughts too much? And I think that there's kind of a cognitive bias in the psychedelic world. And even the word psychedelic itself means mind manifesting. So there's right there is the cognitive bias that we have people like Michael Pollan, who writes his book, How to Change Your Mind, that it's all about thoughts and all about thinking and about breakthroughs and realizations.
Yes, but it's a joke that someone that has taken twice some substance writes a book, or yeah, several substances. It's absurd.
Yeah.
But he has giving, at least he has given it to knowledge. But I don't see any, well, it's my thoughts, yes.
Yeah. But I was just using that really as an example, that there is this cognitive bias, and we can trace the cognitive bias, for example, all the way back to ancient Greece, where the philosophers said, well, actually, we have two souls. There's the rational soul and there's the animal soul. And the rational soul is masculine, and valuable, and we want to cultivate that, and we want to use the masculine rational soul to dominate over the feminine animal soul, which is the body sensations. And so there's this long-standing bias in Western cultures of prioritizing the cognitive over the felt somatic experience of the body. And most religious traditions as well emphasize this idea of transcending beyond the physical world, that that's the ultimate religious goal. And that's where we get back into that realization of it's just about being present. It's not about ascending or escaping.
It's very, it's uncomfortably simple.
Yes. Yes. And the ego doesn't like that. He says, no, that's too simple. No, I need to think about that more.
Yes, because in fact, when sometimes in my normal life, quotidian life, thinking is as if it was an addiction.
Yeah.
We are addicted to think, and to think stupid things, because if your thoughts were really interesting, but in fact they are not, the majority, they are silly things, they are nonsense things that they engage one with another and all this, no? And, it's a joke, no? I want to talk also about sex and psychedelics, no?
Okay.
It was a very... gracioso, amusing. No, amusing, no. Made me laugh that in a forum in Facebook, in Bufo and 5 minutes in the group, no, I asked, well, something about sex some change in your sexual life related with the use of 5-MeO-DMT, and there was no answer. And it was for me very strange, because I think, well, I don't believe it. Well, and I want to talk with you, to comment with you some questions I think on this and with the audience, if they what they think in their houses, no? Well, I'm going to describe sex as in its maximum potential, it drives person to the ego dissolution also.
Yes.
And I will explain why, in my opinion, well, in my opinion, but it's a copy of Wilhelm Reich, really. Yes, because when you have a sexual encounter with someone, with someone, with the one you connect and all these things, no? And not just in the moment you are in bed, no. I don't, before, when the energy flows with the person, with your wife or with your couple or some friend, well, with the person, with the one you connect for this, no? Then there is an increase of energy, a slow increasing of energy in your body due to the hormones play, hormones gain, the cocktails of that begins to change, no? And then we make a jump. You arrive to the bed and to the skin contact. And the skin contact creates through bioelectricity, begins as the same time when you, with a static electricity, when you rub with wool, lana, yeah. What have sheeps. With wool, you wrap some metacrylato or something like this, that there is electricity. Well, then we are, our body is an electric body also. And then the contact of the bodies of different charges begin to increase the level of energy every caress, every kiss, every touch, every increase of excitement goes increasing the energy. Every time more. And while the goes on and on, it goes concentrating in your pelvis, in your genital area overall. Not only, but well, for being standard. No? And then the charge continues increasing. And there is a moment that the body moves along in the coitus movement that tries to discharge, to give curves, to give this energy. But the rubbing of the genital organs, one in other, increases more the energy. No? And then there is a moment that our full body can't contain this energy. And in the trying to let it go, no, to give, I'm not trying, if not, the energy moves, and then it accelerates the movements, and then it increases more the energy. And there is a moment that is the explosion of the orgasm. And then there is a, it has the potential in optimal conditions, not always, in optimal conditions, it has the potential of representing a certain kind of ego dissolution.
Yes.
In fact, in French, there is an expression of petite mort, that is, yeah, little death, no? That is a period immediately surrounding the orgasm, more after than before, that where the person is a little as unconscious, no? Something like this. Not unconscious, but not in its ego, no?
Right.
And then what we are reestablishing is good,
mm-hmm,
the word?
Yeah.
With psychedelics is something so simple as that if we grew healthy, then probably with hypothetically, with sexuality would be done. the sexuality reconnects us with the whole, with the totality, no? And then if obviously, as all of us, we are with blocks here, that this rarely happens. is not common because the blocks act as it happens with 5-MeO-DMT, but what happens is that 5-MeO-DMT is much stronger and can boom the blocks, but sexuality is not so stronger to boom the blocks.
Right.
This can only happen if the blocks are very soft, are very smooth, but if not, not happens. It was a comment that I had in my mind. This.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a very interesting question that you raised. It sounds like you raised it in one of the groups on Facebook of how has your 5-MeO-DMT experience impacted your sexuality. And, you know, this is something that comes up a lot in the integration calls that I do with people, because they tell me about how then I went back and made love with my partner and I went into a 5-MeO reactivation. And sometimes people report that if their partner has not had 5-MeO, that it can be kind of disturbing for them because someone's going into this state of oneness. And because there's so much energy being exchanged between the two bodies, that it affects the other person. And so if they're not familiar with going into a non-dual state, it can be, it's like taking a secret hit of 5-MeO-DMT and not being prepared for it, right? That all of a sudden this is happening. And it's like what you described, where you were looking at your wife and you couldn't tell the difference between you, right? So this happens to people when they're making love, where you lose this sense of boundary where you can't tell, is that my organ or is that the other person's organ? Is that my face or is that not, is this my body or not my body, that these boundaries get loosened? And it's also really common for people to report, at least privately to me, I guess they're not comfortable doing it in public on Facebook and these groups yet, but certainly people report to me in our calls together that sexuality becomes much more energetically charged after.
Yes, logically.
Yes, because they're much more aware of energy at that point, and that you can feel these energetic movements, you can feel these impulses, and then you can ride them into that state of oneness. And actually, since you mentioned it, something that's next on my list is I have a book from an author that just was sent to me, and it's called Psychedelic Sacred Sexuality, Explorations to Ecstasy and Oneness with Your Lover. So that's actually next on my list, and I need to read this book.
Title, this title would be a bestseller.
Yeah, that it's such an important topic, but there is a hesitation to talk about it in the psychedelic community, that people are afraid of talking about body parts. They're afraid of talking about sexuality. They're afraid of talking about these more embodied aspects, right? Because again, there's that cognitive bias that we want to talk about how you're thinking better, or how you've overcome your trauma, or you've overcome your depression, or you've had insights and downloads, but people are shy of talking about, well, what happens in the body? How do we unblock it? How do we reconnect it? What does that look like? Because it's often messy as we're reconnecting and energizing the body. And that then this sexuality bit is a huge part of being a human being and connecting with another and using that as an energetic modality to experience oneness. And just people are they're shy. They're shy to talk about this kind of thing. And it's like, it just makes me think of back when I was hosting the Exploring Psychedelics conference here in Ashland. There was this one elderly couple. I mean, they were in their 70s. They would come down from Canada to come to this conference that I put on here in Ashland. And every year, this old man, he would pull me aside and he said, well, Martin, when are you going to have people talking about 5-MeO-DMT and sexuality and sexual experience? Because that's what my wife and I, that's why we like 5-MeO-DMT, that we use it for our sexual connection. And
yes,
the problem was finding somebody to actually talk about it, because people, they don't want to talk about it, and that there's the fear that if you do bring up the topic of sexuality, that then you're going to be labeled as, you know, some kind of deviant or being problematic in some way, because there's like an increasing prudeness to culture, I think, right now, where
an increasing what?
A prudeness that people are hesitant to talk about sex and sexuality. That people are shy of really talking about it, and especially in the context with psychedelics, that I don't think there's enough conversations around it. That's why I'm looking forward to reading this gentleman's book and having them on the podcast, because I think it's such a huge part of being human beings. We're sexual beings. It's part of who we are.
Yes, it's very a central question in human life, in human energy, from any point of view, but in an energetic point of view, I think that sexuality is the structure and summary of person.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fundamental to everyone's identity.
Yes. Yeah.